Now for the official postmortem on the election. We go to Washington, D.C., and our friend, now contributing columnist for the Chicago Tribune, Pulitzer Prize-winning Clarence Page. All right, Clarence, I have my one question. What happened? And why?
That is the question of the hour, isn't it? My goodness. I have been trying to sort through it all. I've been getting this profound sense of deja vu, first of all, because it takes me back to when Trump beat Hillary Clinton, which nobody seemed to be expecting at the time, including me. And once again here now, we have very, very similar case in so many ways, but except now we have several convictions, several charges as well added to his resume, and I think what Jimmy Kimmel said it well the other night when he said we had a choice of a felon or a prosecutor, and we chose the felon.
Yeah,
so it's, democracy for him.
I think that many people viewed those prosecutions as persecution, and it seemed to help Donald Trump, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question of that. And that's what really is, one of Donald Trump's big talents is to be able to spin with the best of them. In fact, he's a leading spinner, really. But there is he first of all had built up a permission structure around himself, whereby people took any kind of criticism as a persecution, and then when that criticism was elevated to the area of a felony prosecution, it was just, well, you see, there they go, they won't stop. And remarkably, I mean, just going out talking with Trump supporters, I've seen this happen. And it happens on the left as well. I'm old enough to remember, and you too, I'm sure, various cases in the past where we had politicians on the left, especially in Chicago. I remember at least one who was reelected from prison and then went to the primary election and won reelection again. So, and we have other famous cases in history. So I see that kind of precedent for what's happening now. And so we should not be surprised.
No. And here in Chicago, Donald Trump jumped to 22% of the city vote in 2024. That's up from a little more than 12% in 2016. The 41st ward on the far northwest side of the city is the only one where Donald Trump won more than half the votes on Tuesday. In Illinois statewide, his vote grew to over 45% this year. That's up from 38% in 2016. So they definitely, they being the Republican Party, appealed to people that in the past had been in the Democratic pocket, right?
Yeah, which is kind of typical in Illinois, isn't it? We have quite a long tradition for that sort of voter behavior. This particular case, we see people you mentioned 41st Ward, for example. I mean, just the closer you get to the suburbs, the more likely you are to find Republican voters. That formula still holds largely true. At the same time, Illinois, the Republicans we have become rather accustomed to this too. So it's kind of like being a Democrat Virginia these days. You never know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, but Donald Trump appealed to the working class segment of the population, and his appeal went across racial lines. In 2020, there were 15 majority black wards here where more than 90% voted for Joe Biden. On Tuesday, there were only 7 majority black wards where more than 90% voted for Harris.
Yeah, well, that too gets into the element of how much support Democrats may have lost because of having Harris on the ticket. I prefer to say that Harris was good for the ticket when Joe Biden had to resign. Some people, critics say he was forced to resign. But nevertheless, it's a kind of swing that there really wasn't enough time for her to establish a proper campaign, you could say, because of the rocky way the whole campaign began. She's to be credited for generating as much enthusiasm as she did. But you find this to be true in Chicago and New York. I noticed places where Donald Trump did make some campaign appearances, and folks said, oh, what, it's going nuts, he expects to get support there. But it was a two-pronged approach that, for one, reduced the resistance that people had to him, concerned about whether he was a racist, and number two, soften up a lot of that opposition that he had been getting in the black community. Mm-hmm. And we got to mention something here, which is the gender and age factor.
Right.
Young black male voters were a big surprise to a lot of folks this time because of the way they swung over in favor of Trump. And I got to say, as the father of a young black male in his 30s, classic bro territory, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, that's a very real thing. And he and I argue all the time about politics, which I got to blame myself for that because he got used to it. He was watching McLaughlin Group every day growing up.
Yeah, I can't blame him. But Clarence, didn't the Harris campaign misread the electorate because it seemed like the voters were more interested and more concerned about inflation and immigration than about Donald Trump's character?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to say they read it correctly, but they didn't respond.
Good point.
Enough. Mm-hmm. Because people always complain about how the price of eggs is too high. But this is a very real thing that too many of Biden's people kind of kissed off. It's here's what people really care about, you know. And the same thing happened with the border issue early on, especially that they were slow on the uptake to see how significant the migrant issue was going to be, even in a city that, I don't need to tell you, had such a housing crisis going on for a while there with migrants. And that was a big factor. It's not so much whether people like migrants or not as how do local political leaders handle it. Yeah. And in the Biden's case, they nationalized the issue.
People like you, I'll put myself in this category, were focused on this, and we thought, man, there's more interest now than ever before, and you had the early voting crowds, people waiting in long lines. But yet, when the smoke cleared, the turnout was much lower than in 2020, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right. And that was a surprise. But part of that, of course, is our excitement as journalists and media people covering all of this. And we got information and action coming in from all directions every day. But when you really look at it, you know, I had to step back and say, you know, compare this to the first time Trump ran. And it was remarkably similar when you look at the way the turnout occurred and the way the votes came in. And that was something that I think caused a lot of us to miss noticing what a major trend was happening over toward Trump in places and people that we never expected.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at some of the headlines on editorial pages. Trump's victory puts democracy to the test. But wasn't this an example of our democracy, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. At the same time, well, I always say that when somebody wins who was not that popular with a lot of people, this is how democracy works. And you can have some really bad decisions sometimes, but if you have faith in the system, that's something that you just hang in there and watch what happens next. Mm-hmm. Right now, people are assessing what a new Trump administration will mean. The thing we got to sort out, first of all, is how much of what Trump said on the campaign trail was real and how much was BS or how much was his bluster, of which there was ample proportions. He talked about arresting journalists. I'm sure he'd like to, but will he make that? Does he really want to pick that fight?
Yeah, what and, you say in the campaign is a lot different than what you do when you're in office. I guess we should remember what Winston Churchill once said, democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others, right?
Well, one of my favorite quotes, absolutely. I'm always telling my son this, by the way.
It's a great line.
Democracy.
Clarence Page in Washington, D.C. Thank you, bro. Appreciate the time this morning.
Right on, brother.
Be well. Thank
great
you, Clarence.
Great to talk to you, Bob. Take care.
Always good to talk to you.